I want to talk about a vaccine controversy that is going on here in the Midwest and, in fact, all over the country. 34 different states have talked about whether or not they should force girls who are going into sixth grade in school to get this new vaccine that Merck has put out. Now, Merck is on the hot seat a lot this week because, especially here in Missouri, the Vioxx lawsuit is going on, one of many that Merck is going to have to deal with. But Merck has come up with this vaccine called Gardasil, which fights against several of the strains of the HPV virus, which can lead to cervical cancer. And we have now reached the end of my knowledge about HPV and what Gardasil can do. So before we talk about whether it's right to require the vaccine, let's get somebody in here who does know a little bit more about this. Her name is Dr. Rosanna Gray Swain. She's an OBGYN at Barnes Jewish here in St. Louis. Hi, Rosanna. How are you?
I'm well. Good afternoon.
Tell me what HPV is and how bad, or I don't want to say bad, but
prevalent.
How prevalent is cervical cancer in this country?
Sure. So to start with, HPV is a virus that is almost exclusively sexually transmitted and is responsible for the vast, vast majority of all cases of cervical cancer, precancerous lesions known as dysplasia of the cervix, and also is responsible for a large number, approximately half of the cases of genital wart, as well as the more rare cases of vulvar and vaginal cancers. So that's what the virus is and what it causes and why everyone's interested in trying to find ways to prevent its infection.
Okay. How many, does this only affect women?
The HPV virus?
Yes.
No, cervical cancer clearly only affects women directly
right.
from a health standpoint, but the HPV virus is generally transmitted to women from male partners through sexual intercourse. So it is carried by men. There's not, to date at least, a great understanding of what its effects are on the male genital tract. So far, there's not as clear an evidence that it's responsible for male cancerous lesions like it is on the female genital tract, although it has been implicated in anal cancer in men.
Okay, so but for the most part, we're talking about men as carriers and women as the victims of this.
Women definitely bear the burden of the disease.
Okay. All right, so now this new thing that Merck came out with, and it's actually been out for about 9 months now, called Gardasil. How effective is it against the HPV virus?
So the Gardasil vaccine is targeted against four of the high-risk strains of HPV. So it's important to understand that there's many, many strains of HPV, greater than 60. Four of those strains, number 6, 11, 16, and 18, have been implicated as high-risk strains, or those which are predominantly responsible for causing the precancerous and cancerous changes that we're talking about. So the vaccine is targeted against preventing infection of those four high-risk strains, and is highly effective in the studies that have been done so far at providing immunity in the recipients of the vaccine, which translates to an estimated reduction of 70% of cervical cancers and about half of all cases of genital warts in patients who have been fully vaccinated.
Well, that to me sounds like it's very effective. I would qualify something that reduces something else by 70% as very effective. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's important to realize that even though it reduces that, it does not eliminate a woman's need for annual screening.
Okay, and of course, anybody who is going to completely abstain from sex is not going to have this problem, but as we know, even if we're not talking about teenagers having sex, eventually, unless a person leads a completely celibate life, they could be exposed to this by simple sexual activity, and it could be with a partner who is just a carrier.
Correct, and as we just said a minute ago, men have very few disease responses to the infection, and therefore they usually don't know they're a carrier.
Okay.
So they're not aware that they may be transmitting this potentially devastating or lethal virus to their partners.
And is it true there are no tests for men to know if they have it or not?
Correct. Currently, we are not testing men for HPV because we don't know what to do about it if they have it.
Okay. So if a woman does get cervical cancer or contracts HPV, would these shots help, or is this a preventive thing you have to take when you're very young?
That's a good question. So it's not marketed as a treatment for a woman who already has dysplasia or cancer. Getting the vaccine will not change the course of that already existent lesion. However, we do vaccinate women who have evidence of HPV or changes because, as we just said, there are many, many strains of HPV, and she may have been infected with strain number 16 that caused this lesion. We can cure that lesion, but then she's still vulnerable to the other high-risk strains unless she gets the vaccine.
Okay. Is it important that we give this to girls as young as, well, when you're in sixth grade, you're, what, 11 years old?
Sure. The ideal candidate for receiving the vaccine is going to be a young girl or a woman who's naive to the virus, meaning they've never been exposed before, so therefore they can get the maximum benefit from getting the vaccine and develop immunity to all four of the high-risk strains before they're ever exposed.
All right. Now, some religious conservatives in this country have raised concerns that the vaccine is providing young girls with a license for sexual promiscuity. They say the argument is similar to the one that they use against contraception, which is, sure, look, let's just tell young girls don't have sex and then they won't have these problems.
Correct. I think that's a very naive assumption. I think it's a good question to ask. Are we providing something that provides false reassurance to young girls? That's a valid question, and we have to make sure that we counsel women, we give them the vaccine. This in no way, you know, trades places with annual screening and use of condoms and abstinence and other means of protecting yourself. This is just another layer of protection on top of your abstinence, condoms, and whatever other regimens you find appropriate to protect yourself. And if you extrapolate the data, there's actually very good studies looking at advanced provision of emergency contraception, for instance, which was one of the hot topics, to young girls. If they have this, will they go out and be more promiscuous because they know that their risk for pregnancy will be less? The data was very clear that that does not happen, that providing girls with the power and the knowledge to protect themselves does not alter their behavior, particularly in a more risky way. So I think there's no evidence to support the idea or the concern that providing young girls with the vaccine will lead them to engage in risky behaviors.
That's not going to stop people from having those concerns, of course,
no,
but that's fine.
In fact, bringing your daughter in for an HPV consultation and possible vaccination can open the door to actually talk to her about more effective ways, such as abstinence and or condoms, to protect herself. And it can really open the door for a lot of education for young girls.
Wait a second. You're getting pretty controversial here, Doctor. You're saying the information is good.
The information about Gardasil, absolutely.
No, you're saying giving people information is a good thing. That's,
yes,
you know, there are a lot of people who are going to disagree with you. They want to keep everybody in the dark. Don't tell them anything, because if you tell them stuff, they might do it.
Well, I think the evidence is pretty clear that when it comes to sexual behavior, that's not how it works.
But isn't it interesting to point out, Doctor, that we all have taken our kids in for shots. They have no idea what those shots are for.
Right.
Right. And a lot of them have to do with not having any relevance to altering behavior or engaging in promiscuous activities. You know, we're going to not counsel children, don't be around anyone with chicken pox. No, we're just going to give you the vaccine, and that's the way it goes, because it's not tied to something that's so alterable as is sexual behavior.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about, and I know you're a scientist and you're in the medical profession, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the politics of this, because the bill that's being proposed in Missouri and elsewhere, and only one state has this as law now, and that's Texas, where a rather conservative governor, Rick Perry, over the objections of the legislature there, put this into effect so that all girls going into sixth grade will have to be vaccinated beginning in the fall for the 2007-2008 school year. And there are more than a dozen states, including Missouri and Kansas, that are looking at following that lead. The question is whether this should be a mandatory thing, because when kids are going into various levels of school, whether it's kindergarten or third grade or fifth grade or ninth grade, they have to be vaccinated for rubella, for the measles, for polio, for hepatitis, for chicken pox, etc. Should we add this to that list?
From a public health standpoint, I think the answer is quite clearly yes. The effect on reducing the burden to women in society from cervical cancer and precancerous lesions could be tremendous from this. And the risks of the vaccine are really quite minimal from a medical standpoint.
But what about the notion that those things that I mentioned that are already vaccinated against, those are infectious diseases? And so we're not only going to vaccinate a child to protect the child, but also to protect the other children in that class, because you don't want to have a classroom with 30 kids in it and one kid has not been vaccinated against chicken pox or the measles or the mumps, and they end up with it, and now it can be passed along to somebody else in the class who hasn't been vaccinated. And so we really do have a public health concern. Isn't vaccinating for this, using Gardasil or any other future medications, vaccines that come down the pike, isn't that more of an individual thing rather than a public health concern?
It's not all that different than the hepatitis B vaccine, actually. The transmitting hepatitis B, it's not an airborne disease. It's really transmitted by intimate behaviors and sharing of bodily fluids. So the Gardasil is not all that far off from the hepatitis B vaccine in terms of a classroom infectious disease standpoint.
Okay, thank you. See, this is why I had you on, because you know this information, and I appreciate your expertise. Thanks for your time today.
Well, can I ask one last question before you go? Because this one really targets women and their health behavior, even though we have learned from you that women get HPV from men. But what we read in the CDC...
Can I just stop you right there? I didn't like the way you said that. That was one of those men kind of things.
I didn't say, you know, I love men.
That brings up a good point about men. Should we be vaccinating men and young boys as carriers? And that's a question that has not been fully addressed, and probably over the next few years we'll see evolve into a major issue. And most likely the recommendation will be also to vaccinate young men, not only for their protection against anal cancers, but also from a public health standpoint, and another means of adding to the repertoire of protecting women from HPV and cervical cancer.
And the question too becomes the loss of the pap smear in the health behavior of women, because the CDC says that most women who get cervical cancer in the U.S. have never had a pap test.
So, that's correct.
And that is one of those things that
it's stunning, isn't it?
It's absolutely stunning.
It is. That's because those women who do get screened very effectively but get treated for early lesions and therefore almost never or extraordinarily rarely are allowed to progress to cancer. It's usually the women who've been marginalized in the healthcare system for whatever reasons that have not had access to screening that show up with an advanced stage precancerous or cancerous lesion.
I suppose we can't mandate a pap smear.
I don't think we should be doing that.
Yeah.
All right, Doctor, thank you for your expertise. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Rosanna Gray Swain, an OBGYN at Barnes Jewish here in St. Louis.